south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, today I'd like to start off once again by mentioning that my January 2016 Latin American Insider Seminar is all set up and ready to go. And you know, over the last few months since my last seminar, I've been getting a lot of inquiries asking me about this particular seminar because it seems that one, more and more people are realizing that things are sliding downhill fast in the first world and they just better get that plan B going. And two, since January's the dead of winter in most of the states, why not combine a real-life mission like coming down to Latin America and getting boots on the ground along with fantastic weather? Because, you know, it's always fantastic weather down here, especially in the Altiplano, that 2% of Latin America that I prefer to live in myself. Now, remember, in those eternal spring Altiplano regions, it's only an hour or two drive from a real nice coastal beach. So, if you want sun, fun, hot weather, and eternal spring, they're not mutually exclusive. By the way, they don't call those Altiplano regions eternal spring for nothing, you know. Now, when I first got down to Latin America, to show you what kind of a clueless gringo I was, it took me about 5 years of trudging around Latin America to realize there even was an Altiplano region. Nope, never heard of it before till I'd been down here a few years, and my geography teachers back in Chicago never mentioned it either. Duh. We all had the impression that anything south of the border was hot, sweaty, humid, and miserable unless you were in a beach chair sucking down tropical drinks all day, the ones with little umbrellas in them. So why am I mentioning that? Well, that's just to point out that if you come down to my seminar, you'll get at least a 2-year head start on being an astute expat. In other words, we'll knock some of that cluelessness right out of you. Now, I am being conservative here because most people who attend a seminar say they get at least a 5-year head start. Imagine how much money that'll save you in the long run as compared to clueless gringos who come down and spin their wheels for sometimes 2, 3, 4, even 5 years. I mean, when I came down, I spun my wheels all the time. Just remember, I came down when cell phones were just starting to come in and almost no one had them. And there really was no internet to speak of down here yet. So it was all newspaper, print, snail mail, and landlines. Meaning it was just impossible to find out certain simple things you could just look up on the internet in 10 seconds these days. That's the kind of world it was down here some 20 to 25 years ago. Now, for you listeners that are old enough, remember what the world was like before cell phones, Google, and YouTube? And sure, I hate the social websites and Google especially. But you can get around that, of course, by not signing up for that crap and using search engines like StartMail that strip off your IP address and don't record anything. But you knew that already, right? Okay then, my January 2016 Latin American Insider Seminar will be kicking off Saturday, January 9th and going through the following Thursday, the 14th. Now remember, your 6 hotel nights will be included in the price, including that last Thursday night. So those of you who gotta get out in a hurry Friday the next day, you won't incur any additional costs. But honestly, most seminar attendees come a few days early and or stay a few days, even weeks later, to explore and check out the endless things to see and do, and we're there to help you all the way. The reality is only a small percentage of seminar attendees leave the very next day. The rest plan on staying some extra days and are always glad they did. Now, my seminar coordinator and my translator girls are available well before the seminar begins by email and Skype, etc., to help you work out your itinerary for those extra days. Since the ladies live down here and know all about Central America, we have a lot of suggestions to make and know all the right places to send you. And generally, those extra days are not just about touring. Some people check out the housing markets, rentals, land, various neighborhoods, business areas, those gigantic food markets too. Some attendees on their extra days visit volcanoes and sugar plantations, mines and lumber yards, even private helicopter schools. Whatever you have in mind, with a little notice, we can generally set it up for you. And of course, our seminar lawyers available before and after the seminar To answer any of your legal questions and to work out residency problems, banking, SA corporations, etc. Yes, all those things we talk about here on the Expat Files to get you ready to make that move down here to Latin America. I mean, that's why you're listening to this program, right? Or maybe it is for the bad jokes and the expat Eddie stories. Who knows? Anyway, since the last seminar about 3 months ago, I've been getting emails from people asking me to put them on the waiting list. And again, this time I'm giving an early bird discount. Here's how it works. If you sign up for the seminar before November 1st, that's a month away now, there'll be a $500 per person discount built into the price. Now, people from past seminars have told me that $500 discount covered their entire airfare down from a major U.S. hub. So do sign up before November 1st and get that discount. And by the way, if you sign up as a married couple or two people staying in the same room, double occupancy, you automatically get a $1,000 discount. That would be $500 each. And that's in effect whether you sign up for the early bird special or not. Now, if you sign up as a couple before November 1st, you also get the additional $500 discount. And you'll see that's all spelled out on the sign-up page. Now, as far as the complete description and the sign-up page, that should be available by the time this show goes out, which is Friday, October 2nd. But if it isn't, it'll be up, I'm sure, by Sunday, October 4th. And to get to that sign-up page, you can either send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll ship it on over to you. Or you can go to the website I'm newly affiliated with. It's called thenewexpat.com. Now, this site is actually run by a very interesting guy who came down to one of my very first Latin seminars. Now, he'd been to a lot of seminars before, including international living seminars, etc. And based on what he saw down here during my seminar, decided to, guess what? Live in Central America, specifically beautiful Antigua, Guatemala, permanently. So he moved down after he came to the seminar about 3 years ago, and ever since has been aiding and helping new expats with questions and relocation stuff through his website called thenewexpat.com, a great blog site with a tremendous amount of great information for anyone coming down to Central America mostly, though he has wide-ranging information and blogs about all of Latin America. Anyway, I highly recommend you go to his website and check it out. He's a good friend of mine, a guy I trust so completely I even invited him to a party at one of my houses. Of course, I blindfolded him and put him in the trunk of an unmarked SUV, and all he knows is that it's way out in the middle of some coffee field, and since there's thousands of coffee fields down here, well, you get the picture. Anyway, I highly recommend thenewexpat.com, and that's where you'll be able to find a lot of my stuff in the future, including my recent shows and my new seminar sign-up page, and I'll be reporting on a lot of other cool stuff there, too. Again, it's easy to remember, thenewexpat.com, all one word, run by a very knowledgeable good friend of mine who goes coincidentally by the name of John Galt, which should ring a bell to all you freedom lovers out there. Anyway, my January 2016 seminar sign-up page should be available on that site. So just go to the main page. It should be there. Click on it. Or just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a link. Now, as far as the old website, expatwisdom.com, I'm no longer affiliated with that site. I didn't own it anyway. I was just supplying content to it. And you know, when you don't own something, you have no control over it. So, as it turns out, the owner and webmaster has been just way too busy with other projects. And believe me, I'm no webmaster or IT guy. I'm just the guy that puts out the shows, the reports, and the content. Which is for the best, because now I'll be linked up with thenewexpat.com, hosted by a guy who's got heavy boots on the ground down here in Latin America, and that's the way it should be. There's really no good reason why a Latin American or expat website should be hosted or managed from another continent. That only makes sense, right? So, once again, skip expatwisdom.com. I'm not there anymore. And if someone happens to pick up that site and you go there and you see any of my content on it, it was not in any way authorized by me. Now, one more thing about the seminar. I do get emails from independent ladies who want to come down alone and they ask me questions about the safety and the accommodations, arrangements and stuff. I especially get a lot of questions from ladies who've never been down to Latin America before. Now, after last week's show, I got such an email from a lady that made me laugh for a couple of minutes, and every time I think about it, I still chuckle. And here's what she says. Dear Johnny, you know how these days we're all so busy, especially up in the first world, Seems like everybody's multitasking. They're on the phone at the same time, surfing the web, pounding out an email like this, making dinner, and sometimes, like me, listening to the expat files all at the same time. And of course, everyone says that women are able to multitask a lot better than men. However, there is a limit to such madness. In fact, I hope when I get down to Latin America, I can let the air out of my bubble for a while and just sort of lay back and relax until I get back on a much slower version of my treadmill. I hope. Sorry, Johnny, but I just know I'll end up on a treadmill again. Might be a smaller one, but I'll still have one. Because, you know, if you're like most people from up in the States, male or female, surely if you're not born with a silver spoon in your mouth, you've been running on that treadmill a long, long time, and you get pretty used to that as a way of life. You just don't know much else. Especially a person like me, who's 40-ish. I figure I've been on some kind of treadmill now for at least 30 years, starting with high school, where I had to get competitive to get a scholarship to go to college, since I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. And after that, as they say, it was all downhill. Or in reality, when you're on a treadmill, you're always inclined to go uphill. Anyway, the other day, as usual, I was excessively into multitasking once I got home from work. And while doing all that, sometimes you hear things in the background that you completely misinterpret. Like, for example, some music on a radio or a voice on TV that halfway registers in your consciousness and sometimes not. In other words, you don't get the full message. It's kind of muddled. And in this case, I was listening to your show. You were talking about your upcoming January seminar. And for a second, I actually thought you said you were having a boobs-on-the-ground seminar. Yes, a boobs-on-the-ground seminar. And suddenly, I stopped everything I was doing and dropped my cutting board on the floor in the kitchen. I just had to crack up. And in that little moment, my mind wandered. I imagined you were having a seminar for well-endowed geriatric old ladies. And by that time, you know, I'd already had two glasses of wine, so I went into a kind of a giggly, silly mood. I know we've all been there, right? By the way, Johnny, as for me, it would be years before I'd be able to qualify for a seminar like that. Anyway, Johnny, I'd like to thank you for that little inadvertent comedy chuckle moment. It made my day. Now, that's not to say I didn't rewind my MP3 player, just to make sure I wasn't cracking up. So, for the record, yes, you did say boots on the ground. Now, Johnny, note, that little incident just reinforces the fact that I'm coming down to your seminar because I got to get out of the first world. Or, soon enough, I really will start cracking up. Oh, and just one more thing, Johnny. I wrote to you a couple times before saying I was going to come, and I never did, but this time for sure. Oh, and one question. When two people come down to your seminar and share a room, they get a $1,000 discount. Not that I'm cheap, but these days, like everyone, I do watch my pennies. And $1,000 is a lot of pennies. So here's my question. Is there a way perhaps you could hook me up with another single lady who might want to be my roommate so we can both share that discount? No male roommates, please. The point is, I want to concentrate on the seminar and matchmaking, well, there'll always be time for that later. So anyway, not to press the point, I'm just throwing that out there. So Johnny, would you be on board for that? If so, how could I arrange it? Just asking. Either way, see you there. A soon-to-be ex-wannabe, Carla. I really thank you for that, Carla. It made me laugh too. Actually, when you first mentioned it, I thought, now that would be a good Monty Python or Saturday Night Live skit. Enough said about that. Anyway, as far as the question about putting two single people together to get that seminar double occupancy discount, well, guess what, Carla? I've had two or three seminars where exactly that has happened. And how we usually arrange it is like this. People will sign up as singles and send me an email immediately asking if there's anyone else they could possibly pair up with as a double in the hotel room. And then I'll pass their emails on to each other. That's what they want. And then they'll talk with each other, maybe Skype, and see if they're compatible. Maybe a few phone calls, too. And if so, then they'll give my seminar coordinator the word, and we'll put them in a double. And when they get down, they'll get a cash refund for that discount. Which, by the way, again, is $500 per person if you're in a double room with two people. So it's a good question and worthwhile throwing out there, especially for people who are on a tight budget. And so far, in that half dozen or so cases where we've put people together like that, we've had absolutely no troubles, no complaints. It all turned out well and everyone was happy. Unless, of course, there are things that people aren't telling me. Who knows? Oh, and by the way, for people on a budget, you can pay the seminar fee in three spaced out equal payments. That's three separate payments about 1 month apart. And you'll still get the early bird discount if you pay that first payment by November 1st. Meaning you won't have to pay the whole thing by November 1st, just the first payment. That'll qualify you for the early bird discount. But you'll see the details of all that on the seminar sign-up sheet, which should already be on the newexpat.com website, or will be shortly. And if not, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link. And now for something completely different. Here's a startling statistic coming out of Panama's biggest daily newspaper. It says, fully 25% of all native-born Mexicans are now living in the United States, most all of them illegally. So, how do you feel about that? That means 1 in 4 native Mexicans are sneaking into the U.S. On top of that, in the very same article, it says, remisas from illegals living up in the United States are at their highest ever. Now, remember, remisas are, in fact, U.S. dollars sent from working Latins living up in the States, mostly illegals, by the way. They send generally a few hundred dollars a month to their families living in Latin America. And by the way, in some Latin countries, that remisa dollar component that's flowing in is the biggest part of their economy. Hard to imagine, but it's true. Now, to so many of us expats down here, it seems totally counterintuitive because all the press coming out of the U.S. and the First World points to an ever-slowing, in fact, dying U.S. economy. Of course, we can't believe government figures, but if you look at the alternative press, you'll see that the real unemployment rate up there is more like 22%. With around 100 million U.S. citizens on some kind of government aid, people losing their jobs, factories laying off all over the place, you know the story. If all that's true, and I'm sure it is, how is it possible when the average American's income is stagnant or going down, that record amounts of money are being sent back down to families in Latin America from illegal aliens up north? So where are those Latins up in the United States getting all that money from? They can't be printing it like the U.S. government, and they can't be borrowing it because they're illegal and have no credit or credit history. And of course, because most of them are illegal, they're working off the books. And just who are they working for, I wonder. But still, me and all the gringo expats I talk to down here, when we get into that conversation, we just don't get it. How can there be a complete job bust for lower and middle class Americans, and at the same time be a record job boom for illegal aliens? Since they're sending back more money than they ever did in history, they must be making more money than they ever did in history up in the States, right? So let me repeat that, and you see if you can figure it out. While regular American real job statistics are only slightly better than they were during the, get this, Great Depression, meanwhile, illegal aliens are facing an excellent job market once they get into the country. How could that be? Well, last weekend when I was sitting around with a bunch of gringos, including one very funny and interesting guy named Expat Eddie, all these guys, successful expats who've been down a long time, one guy put it this way. He said back in Michigan, where he comes from, he's in contact with his brothers and his family members. Some of them are small businessmen. And they're telling him that small businessmen up in the States are running on such a thin profit margin these days that they'll do just about anything to cut costs and stay in business. Even though in years past, most of them would never hire illegal aliens or contract out to a firm they knew hired illegal aliens, things are different today. They figure the alternative, that is, closing shop, going bust, or going bankrupt, is worth the gamble. And besides, he said, so many tens, even hundreds of thousands of businesses are hiring people off the books these days that there really is a very slim chance of getting caught. There's safety in numbers, you know. Well, now, that might explain a lot of it, but still, doesn't the fact that the papers down here in Latin America are reporting a boom in remisas strike you odd? And worse yet, that kind of news down here is just the kind of PR steamroller that fires up all the undereducated lower-class Latins making $200 or $300 a month to chance the trek up to the U.S. because once they get there, they've been led to believe by the Latin media and their own families who are receiving remisas that jobs are more than plentiful. In fact, the words American Dream were actually in the title of that news article I was reading from. The title said, loosely translated, based on the ever-increasing remisa figures, the American dream is alive and well. So, bottom line, if you're living up in the States, get ready for more of the same. A lot more of the same. Oh, and by the way, I'm hearing that the word on the street down here now is Obama's such a kind and gentle president, and the borders are so porous that once you sneak in, even if you get caught, it's now becoming common knowledge down here in Latin America that you'll be sent to an immigration hearing, then they'll set a court date and let you go on your own recognizance. You get it? They're telling illegal immigrants who've been caught that it's their responsibility to come back and appear in court. Nope, they don't lock them up. They release them and tell them to come back for the court date. Ha ha! Enough said about that. Haven't you just about heard it all? Time to get that plan B, huh? Oh, and by the way, occasionally you meet a Brit or two down here in Latin America. Usually they're traveling around looking for warmer, clearer climes because, well, Britain's always stuck in a fog and it's kind of miserable, kind of depressing. So if you're down here, occasionally you'll run into one once in a while. And the other day, during a little get-together of long-term expats, one lone Brit did show up and he reiterated what almost all Europeans and Brits say about Americans. They like Americans, but they hate the American government. Kind of the way most expats feel. And there is a 100% correlation. The longer you're out of the U.S., the more you feel like that. Anyway, we got to talking about taxes and tax exiles, and the guy mentioned the U.K. is totally broke, and the people with the real money have all left and moved to places like Spain and Switzerland, even Greece, and Canada, South America, etc. What most of the wealthy Brits did was buy a home or a domicile in one of those countries, and they only visit England 2 or 3 months out of the year, just enough so that they're considered residents for tax purposes in another country. Why? Because the UK has even a more progressively punitive tax system than the US. In other words, if you make a lot of money, you get nailed for 80, 90, even up to 95% in taxes. Then he told this little story. He said he was David Niven's second cousin. Now, you might remember David Niven. He was in the old Pink Panther movies, and he's most famously known as Phineas Fogg in that classic old 50s movie, Around the World in 80 Days. And he wrote some really funny books about Hollywood. One was, I think, called Bring on the Empty Horses and The Moon is a Balloon. I don't know if you've heard of those, but at one time, he'd sold more paperback books than any other author in history. That was back in the 60s and 70s, but still. When he died, and it was in the late 80s, I believe, he left an estate of about 20 million bucks, and guess what? He had 16 million in gold bars in a Swiss vault. Turns out, back in the early 60s, before Nixon closed the gold window, he bought gold at 35 bucks an ounce and sold it when it made a big rally up to 850, and he eventually sold it all at 600. So, this Brit said, his cousin, David Niven, had something like $16 million in gold back in the 80s. Now, here's the interesting part of the story. By the way, this guy had pictures in his wallet of David Niven and his mother and stuff, so he proved it. Anyway, here's what he said. David Niven, in the last 2 years of his life, was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, otherwise known as ALS, a general deterioration of nerves, the same thing that Stephen Hawking has. But unlike Stephen Hawking, back in the 80s when Niven had it, there were no machines and technology to help you breathe and such, so he died 2 years after being diagnosed. Anyway, the Brit told us that about 6 months before he died, when he could hardly walk, his old classic British movie star buddies like Cary Grant and Fred Astaire, Rex Harrison, Richard Burton, in the 80s they were all very old but still alive enough to petition the Queen of England to give David Niven a knighthood before he died. Which, to any Brit, is generally the crowning glory of his career or life. To be knighted by the Queen. Doesn't mean diddly to us, but to the Brits, it's a huge thing. Now, Niven's old movie star buddies then told the Queen he really did deserve to be knighted. After all, he brought in so many, many millions of pounds to the British Treasury in tax revenues because after World War II, he was, for a time, the highest-paid British actor and thus paid the highest taxes. And every time his movies played in England, they brought in huge amounts of tax revenue for the Crown, too. Anyway, some weeks later, the Queen's spokesperson got back to that group of old actors and said they were absolutely right. He deserves a knighthood. But there was just one hitch. First, he would have to pay the British Inland Revenue, which is their IRS, the equivalent of around $11 million in lost tax revenue since, in the late 60s, David Niven, like so many other high earners in England, moved to Switzerland to become a legal tax exile from the UK. Now note, the Brit who is telling this story said there's no crime in doing that. Just like in the States, you can move to another country and get out from under the groping hand of the IRS, and it's perfectly legal. And I spell all that out and exactly how to do it in a 7-part audio program I did just recently called Flagonomics, formerly the 5-Flag System. I'll be telling you more about that in the future. Anyway, the spokesman for the Queen of England informed these guys that if David Niven paid his $11 million or so, he could get his knighthood. Now, that would have proved to have been the most expensive knighthood in history. And Niven, who would have loved to have had a knighthood, remember, to Brits, it's a huge thing. Kind of like being invited by Obama to spend the night in the Lincoln Room at the White House. Only that's nowhere near £11 million, I hear. It only takes about a $200,000 campaign contribution to spend a night in Old Abe's bed. God, I just had a terrible thought. Wouldn't it be the worst nightmare imaginable if you woke up in Abe's bed next to Hillary? I tell you, she's so repulsive, she makes Abe look good. But I digress as usual. So the point is, even though David Niven and so many extremely wealthy Brits left years and years ago, we're talking the 80s now, there's still resentment amongst the older British population. They think these guys are traitors. Especially, the English guy told us, all those Brits that came over to the U.S. after World War II and got U.S. citizenship, which is considered a slap in the face of the Queen. Then the British expat said, what about you guys? You're all expats. You have residencies and passports in Latin countries. That certainly doesn't go down very well with your government and the folks at home. How do your relatives and friends feel about that? Then one gringo expat spoke up and said, yeah, some of my friends thought I was a traitor and my brother thought I was a coward. And he said they all thought I'd be back in a couple of months with my tail between my legs. But guess what? Those same family members are saying these days, how were you so smart? Yes, years ago he tried to explain his reasons for leaving to his family, but it fell on deaf ears. But today, they don't want to remember that part, he says. Now, they say, why didn't you push the point a little bit harder back then? We'd have listened. He said, yeah, right, back then, how could I? The more I'd try to explain, the more nuts you'd thought I was. It's like the old saying, you're never a hero in your hometown. So now, 17 years later, suddenly, I'm the genius of the family. Go figure.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.